More about the US election. I'm sorry, it's the Trumpaholics version of the Daily here. We've been trumping it up all morning and we're still going. So this is we're going to look at some of the lessons for the media looking back at the US election. And I've got on line Dennis Muller, who's an expert on media ethics and senior research fellow at the University of Melbourne's Centre for Advancing Journalism. So not sure how much I've been advancing journalism this morning, but certainly we'll be able to get some lowdown from Dennis Muller. Dennis, are you there? You're not there. There you are.
I am. Here
there,
I am.
Got you there now. Sorry about that. First of all, Dennis, the New York Times wrote that Trump was testing the norms of objectivity. And so he's making a lot of outrageous public statements. What should the media be doing ethically about some of these statements?
Well, they should do what they've always done, and that is they should call out lies for what they are, and then they should set out the facts as they're known and the ways in which people like Trump diverge from the facts. But that's only half the story, I reckon, because the real problem has been ever since the rise of social media and the consequent pressure on the revenue models of newspapers, which means that most of the advertising is now going online and lots of journalists are getting the sack. The pressures that's brought about have meant that in the race to be first, traditional media, particularly newspapers, have forgotten about verification. And so they've played into Trump's hands in this way, and they've undermined their own credibility. So when they start to talk about Trump lying, Trump finds it easy to just point the finger back and say, well, look, you people are corrupt. And everybody shrugs his shoulders and say, yeah, well, what's new?
Well, you know, I think verification is a big problem for a lot of the media because they don't have the time a lot of the time. You know, they've got a deadline of a few seconds to go on air, and here's something to talk about. I know, you know, from
That's
my
true.
Own
yeah.
experience.
Well, I mean, it is.
And, you know, in Fairfax also, if, all their sub-editors got moved offshore and
right.
there's the staff continually gets taken down there at Fairfax. And, you know, that must have an effect on verification, mustn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. And not only all of that, but the performance of the reporters is partly judged on how many eyeballs their stories get.
Mm.
Now, you see, that skews their priorities. It means they've got to go after stories which, for example, are going viral on social media. Now, they might be going viral not because they're true, but just because people find them fascinating. So instead of checking it out first, they're under pressure to get the stuff up, and then they have this awful mantra. They say, if it's wrong, it won't be wrong for long. And what that means is they're sort of relying on their readers to let them know if they've got anything wrong. Well, that is just completely back to front and an abandonment, really, of their professional standards. But you can see where it's come from. And then with Trump, on top of all of that, you've got the elements of the U.S. media, particularly Fox News and broadcasters like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, names that people aren't familiar with here particularly, but big names in the States, who basically trade in outrage. They've made an industry, a big business, out of outrage, and they've tapped into this undercurrent of deep discontent in America. And they have then broadcast stuff which appeals to these discontented people, regardless of whether it's true. And a lot of it is not.
Mm. Well, I remember one of the tweets from Sean Hannity during the Trump, looking like Trump was going to get over the line, was that, you know, that's the end of Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't know that.
And he doesn't know that. I mean, they had stuff about, well, Trump alleged that Hillary Clinton had laughed at the raping of a 12-year-old girl. They had this particular element in the U.S. media had promoted the fantastical lies about Barack Obama's birthplace, about Clinton and Obama being the founders of IS. I mean, the most bizarre things you can think of. But this stuff was given oxygen by these particular elements. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that that's only one part of the US media. And papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post were really caught in a bind. And it was interesting when you said at the start that the New York Times had written about norms of objectivity. Well, the problem is, if you're a responsible broadcaster or responsible newspaper, what do you do if someone like Trump is making the most outrageous allegations? You have to report it. But then you've got to, just reporting is not good enough, because you need to point up to your readers or your audience that there's no basis for this at all. And here, in fact, here are the facts. And that was a failure of a big part of the American media until after the second presidential debate, when the New York Times actually listed 27 lies that it said Trump had told during that campaign. And that, in a sense, became an example for the rest of the U.S. serious media. They started then to call Trump out, but that's too late. That's after the second presidential debate. So
it kind of seems like that then the New York Times must be on the Clinton side, mustn't it? And that's what the way that people seem to be thinking. I was talking to some people from the US, and they were saying that people hear what they want to hear now. And even just on the normal television media and so forth, you know, if you're a Democrat and you listen to CNN, you know, if you're a Republican, you listen to Fox. And those two news services then kind of need to actually tell people more about the Democrat side or the Republican side, don't they? Because that's their constituents.
Yeah, and then we call it the echo chamber effect, where people take the media that reinforces their own prejudices or their own view of the world, and that echo chamber effect is being magnified now by social media. You know, people follow bloggers who agree with what they themselves think. They talk among like-minded people in chat rooms and among follower groups on Facebook. So this echo chamber effect is getting magnified, but that doesn't relieve the media of the obligation to tell the truth as best they know it. And we have to acknowledge that in media, truth is always on the move. If you wait for the last word on something, you'd never write the story.
Yeah.
So it's always contingent.
Yeah. And the Washington Post's managing editor, Cameron Barr, was talking about, you know, it's our obligation to report, you know, if the controversy is being stoked by a candidate or whatever. So if you've got someone like Trump, then he's getting great sort of airtime, isn't he?
He is. And for a long time in this campaign, a lot of the US media were along for the ride. Trump was good for ratings and for circulation, because he was so outrageous and, in a sense, in a perverse way, entertaining. And too many of the media in the States just went along with the ride because it was good for business. And only much too late in the day did they begin to call Trump to account. And by then, of course, Trump found it easy to say that not only were they against him and therefore biased towards the Democrats, but they were exhibiting some kind of moral corruption. Which, of course, wasn't true, but in the great list of Trump lies, that was a pretty small one.
And like, for objectivity, apart from, you know, when you said that the New York Times finally decided to get their act together, what about public broadcasting in the States? Were they the only place you could go to get a bit of objectivity?
Well, I think that National Public Radio was one of the few that all the way through maintained high editorial standards, the sort of standards that we would expect here from the ABC, for example, because they have a particular charter, and they're not really in the business of making money, National Public Radio. It's kind of financed by philanthropy, fundamentally.